Marcel Lejeune, welcome to Power and Witness.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, we just did a Life on the Rock, two shows with you, and just want to talk more about your group, Missionary Disciple, and specifically your work with priests.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we could start even with, I read an article recently by you, I recently read it, I don't know when you wrote it, but it was some of the struggles like young priests were having.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about some of those issues?
Yeah, I think that part of it is that we're not making it easy for our pastors and our priests to come forward with what they're struggling with. I think that, first of all, I think once you get into a parish, a lot of priests struggle with friendships with their parishioners because they're supposed to be spiritual fathers. Great and beautiful, right? But they struggle with, well, I'm supposed to be a spiritual father, but I'm all alone in an island where I'm the, you know, authority and the father figure, and there's really nobody around who's understands what I've been through and what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. And then you've got all the other issues that stack on that. Maybe it's mm-hmm. a unhealed wound. Maybe it's a bad habit or a vice. Maybe it's some, you know, something else. And we just haven't built a support system or a place where it's okay to talk about these things and to deal with them. And I think a lot of priests, and in particular young priests, mm-hmm. are struggling with have an appropriate vulnerability in the areas I need to be in with who? Yeah, am I supposed to be vulnerable and in what way? And so they just clam up and they just try mm-hmm. to keep it to themselves, and then it just builds and builds. And then you've got guys who are having to get, you know, sent away because they have anxiety attacks,
right.
or they just drop out because they're like, you know what, I want to go get married or whatever it might be.
Right. I guess some of the practical, what would that look like? You could have priest groups,
mm-hmm.
but I know I've got a couple like older layman friends that helped me a lot.
Absolutely. I think it really should be probably a both and,
mm-hmm.
Because there's things that you could talk to with priests that only another priest is going to understand. Now some of my best friends are priests. I'm they hang out at my house. I have priests that I coach. I have priests that I train. I have priests that I work with. There are a lot of priests I'm really close to, let's put it that way. So I understand priests about as well as a layman can, and what it's like to be a priest, because I've worked in the church for, you know, decades as well. Even there are only things I think that should be shared among priests. And yet, I think there also are appropriate, like I just have, you know, these men who are my brothers, who are friends, and they know me, and I can kind of, it's not necessarily, hey, I take off my priesthood when I'm with them, but I can just let my guard down a little bit, right? And I think that sometimes it's this expectation that father always has to be on.
Yeah.
That, you know, there's this ministry role and I have to be on. And I'm doing air quotes for those who can't see me, mm-hmm. you know. But I think that there's a lack of a space for these men to be able to be themselves fully. Mm-hmm. And friendship is part of that. And I think also the brotherhood of the priesthood is another.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes as a priest, too, you don't want to scandalize people.
You have
to walk that line of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is that if there are laymen who have that kind of special role in a priest's life, mm-hmm. they, too, need to know, I can't just go share what I've, you know, when mm-hmm. father, even if it's nothing big, right? If father says, man, I'm really struggling with the staff member over here who's driving me up a wall.
Yeah.
That's not for public consumption, right? That information was shared, just like you wouldn't do that with anybody else. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of how can I be an appropriate friend who, there are some things that he shares with me and I share with him and we pray together and we, you know, it's iron sharpens iron. But in all those times, we have to understand there's, you know, and I hate the term safe space, but really that's kind of what it is. It's a place where you can just be real.
Right.
And of course, this is appropriate to the relationship, right? You don't mm-hmm. just, this isn't father confesses his sins to the layman either.
Mm-hmm.
or this is therapy or a 12-step group. That's not what that is. But it's, this is my friend who I can share and say, you know what, would you pray for me? Mm-hmm. You know, I went home to my cousin dying, and I was the one who had to do the funeral. And then I had to minister to all of my family, and nobody ministered to me. Mm-hmm. And I just feel broken up myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's time for the layman to be able to stop and say, Father, I love you. Can we just pray right now? And yeah. I got your back. You know,
right,
those kind of things.
Right.
That's a really privileged place. It's kind of like I get to be Bethany for some priests,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
where they can come. It's like Jesus going to Mary and Martha, right, and Lazarus, right? And he's just like,
yeah,
all right, you guys have known me forever.
Right, right.
You know my stuff,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know, and
yeah,
you know my real personality and all that, you know, not just father up on the pulpit.
Right.
So I
right.
think that's where we have, it's good for priests to have those spaces, but it's also, it's hard then that sometimes those priests find that and then they get moved, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes the institutional church works against really putting down roots for our priests, and
yeah,
that can be a tough thing as well.
And then like with younger families and stuff, I just find they're so busy. Oftentimes they'll say, hey, we have to have it for dinner or something. You know, it never happens because they got kids running around the house they're trying to deal with every day.
Yeah. And I think this happens. Busyness is used as an excuse not to enter into real relationship nowadays. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have to overcome is if everybody's busy, then nobody does friendship and nobody
right.
does community and nobody does real right. relationship.
And
I realized this a while back when I felt a loneliness mm-hmm. and I had a lot of friends,
mm-hmm.
but we weren't going to the depth I wanted,
mm-hmm.
right? And it wasn't regular enough. And so I was kind of struggling and looking around saying, well, who are my good friends? Who are my best friends that I deeply invest in and they invest in me? And I realized all of us were waiting for the other person to make the next step, to make the next mm-hmm. initiation, to make the next invitation. And mm-hmm. I thought, wait a minute, if I'm supposed to be a leader in some context, mm-hmm. right, then I should be the one who's modeling this first. And then hopefully they're going to start to echo it back. And that's what happened. So I started I'm going to take the risk to invest and to initiate. And then they started to do the same thing. And then sometimes I just straight up challenge them. They'd say, you know, I really like being around you and Marcel, something like that. And I'd say, that's great. But if you really want to be my real friend, you're going to have to invite me somewhere sometime.
Right.
I would just say something bold like that. And I've had, but that's what, sometimes the guys would look at me and say, you know what, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on that.
Yeah.
Okay, so when's the next time you're going to invite me?
Yeah.
I'll do it in the next couple of weeks. Okay, I'm going to wait for your invitation. That kind of thing, though, is what a good friend does, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that with those young families and priests that are kind of waiting on that,
mm-hmm.
young family, if you're a young family right now and you're busy, fine. Invite Father into the busyness. The homework can still be going on. The
mm-hmm.
laundry can still be on the couch. You know, it doesn't have to be the beautiful place where we all light candles and, you know, everything is smells and bells when they come into the house perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
That invite them into your domestic church, into your mess, because...
Yeah.
He grew up in a family too. He knows what family life is like.
Yeah.
He's not going to be scandalized or shocked by your mess or your problems or your busyness.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just let him come over and, you know, have some time with the kids and talk to people, have natural conversation. He can do some dishes if he needs to. You know, it's okay. That's I think sometimes it's a matter of the families overcoming this idea that busyness is an obstacle to relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when really it's something we've made. That's not really an obstacle. We just think it is.
You know, I know that I used to hear a lot about him, that Saint Aelred, he wrote a lot about friendship back in the medieval times, I think. And he talked about like virtue is necessary for a deep friendship,
mm-hmm.
you know, on both sides. But one thing that kind of struck me too was like, he would talk about, I think, discerning friendships and you say, okay, this guy'd be a good friend. And then it was like a commitment, like a bond, that I never thought of friendship that way. Since reading about that, I realized, because I was having a friend that he had his own stuff going on that he was really kind of consumed by. And I was kind of, I felt like, you know, I was all the energy into the relationship
mm-hmm.
or something. And but I just thought, you know, stick it out and work for it. You're not getting all that you need right now, but yeah. keep at it. And, you know, their friendship improved and things. So,
yeah, I think that it's natural for certain seasons of a relationship, whether that's a spouse, a friend, in religious community, whatever it might be, that one person's going to be doing a little bit better than the other person.
Yeah.
Whether that's spiritually, mentally, physically, emotionally, whatever it might be, right? Or a combination of all those things.
Yeah.
Just doing better, right? They're healthier, they're feeling good, they're going after it. And the other person is just struggling, right?
Yeah.
And that's an opportunity for the person who's doing better to serve.
Yeah.
That's what Christianity is all about, to sacrifice, to suffer maybe a little bit with them, to slow down. So that other person can walk with them. This whole idea of accompaniment is kind of too buzzwordy. But if we really want to accompany somebody else, it's side by side. And so you can't just outpace somebody. And we don't just want to leave them behind either, especially if there's true friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I've got friends who are struggling right now. People who have had cancer, people who don't have jobs, who are struggling financially. You know, there's all kinds of... When that happens, okay, slow down and serve and pray and be the one who initiates and shows up. And sometimes I might just show up with a bottle of whiskey at my friend's house and say, I'm pretty sure you had a bad day. Right. Can we spend it 15 minutes and have, you know, a finger of bourbon?
Right.
And you just tell me what's going on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or I'm the one who says, hey, I'm going to have something in my backyard, or you guys come over and let's just hang out. Mm-hmm. Those are the kind of times where you're going to have to be the one who leads a little bit more. And that's okay, because sometimes you're going to struggle and they're going to show up in the ICU when I was having bad problems, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's just the way of it.
Let's go back to the priest article for a second. If I remember, one of the points was, like, the young priest can come out and have this idealism, and then he's hit with the reality of stuff he's asked to do, uncomfortableness, whatever. Talk about that struggle for the young priest.
Yeah, I think it depends on the priest and where they're coming from and their worldview, their understanding of themselves, understanding of the priesthood, the understanding of the church. But there is kind of this idealism, and it's a good thing that comes out of young people. When I say young people, I'm putting young adults in there, and most of our priests who are newly ordained are young adults. You think about a priest who's 32 years old, right? And he comes out of seminary, which is, let's first define how seminary life is for most of these men. It's a hyper-masculine, hyper-intellectual, hyper-communal life, where then they're put into a place where it's probably mostly women, mostly people who do not know the content of the faith or the doctrines of the faith, who are poorly catechized, and a place where community is something we very much struggle with. That's the parish. Mm-hmm. And they're probably alone as a pastor, or if they're with as an associate or a parochial vicar, you know, that man may or may not have a good pastor who's supposed to be mentoring him and helping him learn how to be a priest. Okay, so you flipped from one extreme to another, and now he comes out and he's like, I just want to give what I received. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, they try to, you know, it could be a liturgical style. It could be hyper-intellectualism from the pulpit. They struggle because they had this idealism. I just want to hand this on. I want to be a spiritual father. And one of the things I think a lot of men struggle with is how to be a son of the Father in heaven and to receive before they're able to really give as a spiritual father. And... you know, when I was a young dad, let's put it in the context of fatherhood. When I was a young dad as a layman and I had my first kid, they at the hospital, they give you this infant who's newborn. They put it in a car seat that you carry out to your car and you strap in. And every parent has this universal experience nowadays where you're driving home from the hospital thinking, I'm not ready for this. I'm scared. I don't know what I'm doing. I can barely change a diaper. Uh-huh. And they gave me this being who is fully reliant upon me. But I'm going to figure it out. Right? And we have this hyper-idealism. I want my family to be beautiful and virtuous. And I want to give them everything. And I want to be happy. And I want to do this together. And then, you know, decades down the line, you've got people who don't talk to each other. There's all kinds of dysfunction in the house and all kinds of other stuff. Well, that's our Catholic family as well in the parishes.
Right.
And I think what happens is we have to set our priests, our new priests up a little bit more for success by helping them to realize, you know, changing the world's a good objective, even changing your parish, even changing lives. But you can't do that just by, you know, arguing somebody into the faith or your great preaching or whatever. It's really loving them. The love that you provide as a spiritual father. And so all of these things, and among dozens of others, end up, I think, sometimes scarring and wounding and causing deeper problems for a lot of our young priests who at the end of it just say, what's it all for? You know, they think,
what's it all about?
Yeah. I mean, they go back to questioning, or they get cynical, which is even more dangerous in some ways, right? Because the cynicism that can enter in is, oh, it doesn't make a difference, or I can't do anything, or this just doesn't matter, or these people are crazy, right? And they get angry, and and that stuff can fester. Cynicism and anger and disappointment and all those things, those are real, you know, experiences and emotions and thoughts. Okay, so what do I do with them? How do I bring them back to God who can then redeem these things? You know, how do I have the relationships and the community and the other things? Where's the help for me? And I think we've isolated and put on an island so many of our pastors and priests that we just aren't real with them right now about expectations and culture and problems and stuff. And it's going to take a couple of generations for us to sort through this stuff, really.
Yeah. So you're working a lot now with priests and leaders, right? What do you tell them about preaching? Because sometimes I probably might be falling into that camp, maybe hyper-intellectualizing, but yeah, it's like you want to give the best thing that you can have, but are they asking these questions? Are they interested in this? What advice do you give to preachers?
Well, a couple of things I would say. First of all, I think Bishop Barron has really, you know, don't water down the faith or don't dumb down the faith. I think that's absolutely true. We don't want to do that. On the other hand, you know, you and I were talking about von Balthasar before we went live here, right? The average layperson has no idea who von Balthasar is or what he wrote or taught. That's fine. That's okay. And it's still okay that you from the pulpit would talk about what von Balthasar wrote, but we're going to have to be able to do it at a level they're able to receive. We have to know our audience to be able to understand how to proclaim a truth in a manner in which it's received well, not just proclaimed well. And the other thing here is, I think we're gonna have to focus, as all of our modern popes have said, we never outgrow the basic kerygma or gospel message. And that kerygmatic catechesis that always points back to the core message that Jesus Christ has come to save us from sin and death and hell and Satan so that we could go to heaven, so that there's salvation and grace and mercy and peace and everlasting beatitude. That core message never gets old and has to kind of infect all of our preaching because there are always people.
Christological.
Yeah, it's Christological. We were talking about that. But it's always... there are always people in the audience, in the congregation, at the, you know, listening to this podcast, there's always people who are in need of conversion today. And the thing that brings conversion is Jesus, and the way in which we proclaim Jesus needs to be compelling. Yeah. And it needs to be new, ever new. And so we never outgrow that. And I think that right there goes beyond talent or, you know, just great ways of putting things and turn of phrases and all the other stuff. I care less about that than, do you preach Jesus and him crucified, like Paul said, right? Yeah. And do you focus on the things that matter, and are you able to teach at a level where it's received well? I think that's part of what I would say. The other thing is, I think, go ahead and tell stories, but make them personal. That'd be my last bit of advice. As Pope Paul VI said, right, in Evangelii Nuntiandi, he said that people of today will listen to teachers, but only if they're witnesses first. And that was written in the 60s. How much more true is it today? That people want to know, are you doing what you talked about? And are you willing to say, yeah, but I'm not perfect at this, right? They want to know, am I trying? So even with the work I do, like I train priests, I coach priests and bishops in their teams. Okay, so a lot of lay people as well. But these are professionals who work for the church. And when I tell them, okay, I want you to go interview somebody who doesn't go to church, and here's how I want you to do it, here's why I want you to do it, here's what I want you to learn about this, every single time I try to find somebody who doesn't go to church and interview them. This means I've done this a bunch of times, right? Mm-hmm. But I learn something new every time. Mm-hmm. So we have to witness to that which we're asking others to do as well. If we're not willing to do it, mm-hmm. how can we ask others to do it? Mm-hmm. So are we humble enough to say, I don't know it all, and I still need to learn? Are we humble enough to say, I'm not the best at this pastoral practice and maybe need to relearn it or put myself at somebody else's feet to learn something?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I really think that goes a long way with making somebody a really good preacher when they're talking about, you know, themselves in that manner.
Are you an advocate of short homilies, like Pope Francis would often say?
Here's what I would say. It's better to land the plane early than to circle the airport. If you're a good preacher, it doesn't matter how long you preach.
Yeah.
You know, you hear the best of preachers, mm-hmm. and they've got somebody in the palm of their hand, and they could go on for hours, and nobody cares. Yeah. Okay, but that's not the majority of preachers in the church today. So if you're not, you know, top 1% of the preachers, you probably all land the plane a little quicker. Because what's going to happen is you're probably going to make the same point, or you're not going to have an end. And, you know, the other...
Were you at my noon mass today?
No, for real though, I mean, think about it. It's the fact that sometimes it's just, I have to trust I've made my point and that this is good enough and I'm going to go sit down now.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're preaching the word of God, that's enough, right? To get that
out
there. Yeah.
I mean, Paul, there's this tradition that says he probably had a stutter, right? That he wasn't the best of preachers.
Right.
And he would say though, I haven't come to preach with eloquence or, you know, relied upon my argument, but I did so with power. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into, because in my weakness, I am strong, right? So what he's saying is, I'm not the best at this. And I acknowledge I'm not the best at this, but it's not about me. It's about the one who's working through me. It's God, because God can do all things, and God's the one who can change a heart, and God's the one who can transform a life. And so if I believe that God's working through me, then why do I have to get up here and punish these poor people with too many words that aren't going to be?
We were talking before this show. Texas A&M has 500 in their OCIA class.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I thought you hit upon something that, like, how COVID could give an impetus to the desire for community that these young people have. Because why the spike?
Yeah, I think why the spike is for sociologists and smarter people than me. I could come up with about 6 or 7 reasons why the spike. Mm-hmm. One is just momentum in the campus ministry that, you know, I worked there for 11 years, but, you know, it's even under better leadership than when I worked mm-hmm. there. So they're the, you know, like the young man who has my job is better at that job than I would ever was. It's just the kids on campus right now want something solid. It's because there's a cultural moment right now from many different things. Some people are going to say Charlie Kirk. Some people are going to say it's a reaction against the woke movement. Some people are going to say, you know, it's going to be X, Y, or Z. And some say it's because COVID, you know, kind of ruined a lot of kids' lives and relationships. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying, I want something more. I want something deeper. I want something solid. I want it real. Mm-hmm. I want a God who matters and people that love me. Yeah. Well, who doesn't want that? I want that. So it's all that and any number of other things. And I think the other thing is, I don't think you could say, you could talk in general trends always, but a particular person that's right in front of you never know until you ask them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You never know.
How would you, I like to think in terms of like preaching and outreach about, like, oftentimes I'm thinking of like young adults, and because in some sense I think they are the margins, they are mm-hmm. the poor, they're hurting. I mean, the damage of the culture is hitting them harder than people that are older or have families and stuff, I think, in many ways. But how would you characterize, like, young people today in their 20s, say? That, I mean, how would the message need to be tailored or presented to them?
Well, I think it depends, again, on, you know, because if you think about it, a kid who's raised in the Catholic Church in a good family, who was homeschooled or went to Catholic school, who believes in Jesus since they were a little kid, who went to a bunch of youth conferences and good youth group, and then goes to college at Steubenville or a good secular university, but is going to the campus ministry, they get married right out of college, they go to church all the time. Okay, that kid's completely different than the kid who grew up in inner city New York or, you know, in the ghetto of Houston, Texas, who never went to church, who never, you know. So what they need is vastly different in some respects, right? On the other hand, generationally, they're probably all on their phones. They're probably stuck in a virtual world way too much. They probably really were, you know, have been wounded in a sense by the technological wave that's hit us, that they've been told that their life doesn't matter, that, you know, all the, that the Catholic Church hates gay people and all the rest of the untruths. And ultimately they're going to say, well, where do I find truth? Both of them are going to have to ask that question. And is God real? And I think, Father, I think right now, the average person, 20, 30, 40, I don't care, who is out there right now is not asking, for the most part, is not asking specifically Catholic questions until they come to faith. And what I mean by that is, yes, the Catholic in the pew who loves Jesus Christ and is praying every day and is trying to be a good follower of Jesus and a good Catholic, that person might care about the perpetual virginity of Mary. 99% of the people in the world today in the United States do not. What they care about is, who am I? And how do I know it? Where does truth come from? Is there goodness in the world, and how do I find it? And if so, how do I, what is evil? Can I sin? Is there a heaven? Is there a hell? Why, you know, those kind of huge questions. That's what they're wrestling with right now. But here's the other thing. But on the other hand, they don't even know that they're wrestling with it half the time, most of the time, because they've numbed themselves to that deep voice of God who really is the one who echoes that in our hearts. So what's happening is we, our job primarily as the church to the world right now, is really to be the ones who help them stir up those questions in their heart and mind. How do we do that? And ultimately, it's done in a place where we really listen deeply to them and their stories and things like that. And that can get cliche when you say listen to their stories, because a lot of people stop there. That's okay, you listen to their stories in order to build relationship and trust and communion, or as the church calls it, communio, right? We do that so that we earn the right to be able to say, can I tell you about what I believe? Or, you know, here's this man I met. His name's Jesus Christ, and I think he has an answer to all those questions. Or here's my personal testimony. This is how I met Jesus. Or whatever, you know, so that's how we enter in. But it's, if you do that too early, then what it does is just pushes somebody away. When you want to jump right into the faith stuff, I think I think a lot of people who try to evangelize are, kind of have this, you know, ticking clock. Tick, tick, tick. Oh, I got to get to it. I got to get to it. And they jump too soon into the deep water. Now, there are times, I mean, I've been on airplanes and had conversations by the end of the flight. We're praying together. You know, somebody might be healed or, you know, believe or whatever else. I mean, yeah, and that was just a couple of hours. I can see that. But for most people, it's going to take a while. Right. So I don't even know where we started with that, but there you go.
Well, I'm bouncing. I've been bouncing all over the place, but, you know, I was listening to just some clips from, I think it was Christopher Hitchens and one of the rock stars. He's passed away, but rock star atheist. And yeah, one of the things I think about is, like, I know atheism or unbelief is growing, but I don't think they're that hardened. I think a lot of people believe in some kind of spiritual world or reality. I mean, the hardcore guys are saying, you don't have a soul. There's no spirit here. It's just a material world. So I guess maybe that's kind of some of the questions they'd be asking about what is that spiritual thing I sense or believe in, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, the Catholic Church has the answers.
Yeah.
It really does. And the fact is that, you know, all those new atheists, you know, they're blasé now.
Yeah.
Young people don't care about them. They don't even know who most of these guys are anymore.
Yeah.
That's how, because they were a generation ago, right? Mm. They were 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about them anymore. And the fact is, they're not being talked about as much because their arguments failed in large measure.
Mm.
And nowadays, we live in the golden age of Catholic resources right now, where it is so easy to go find out what does the church actually teach. Now, this is probably part of the reason why you see some folks who are Protestant who are becoming Catholic, because they can go explore Catholicism from a safe distance before they have to set foot in a parish or have a conversation with you or me or another Catholic, right? Now, ultimately, we got to get to the incarnational, but because we have all these resources out there, podcasts like this, videos, et cetera, it's just so easily accessible that what ends up happening is, you know, an argument that a Catholic makes now has as much, you know, weight in their life as anything else.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is, our intellectual tradition cannot be matched. Mm-hmm. That's just, I mean, our philosophy, our theology cannot be matched.
Right.
Full stop, we're the best in the world at it. And so if you want to match us up against anybody else, go ahead. I'll take my five best. You take your five best. We're going to win, bruh. So that's what's going to happen.
And I think there's a value, and Doug Berry helped me to see this just by his witness too. There's just a value of like men of faith talking. And I think the social media world's providing this. Because I can remember reading a lot, you know, John Paul II's talking about feminine genius and trying to understand this. I found myself listening to, it was a Protestant radio group, and it was like a few like mature women that, you know, they were like 40s or 50s. But talking about their faith, and it really helped me to get more insights. And it wasn't like doctrine, right?
Yeah.
But their faith just came through in their conversation. And I think that can really help a lot of people that are searching, and they're not learning a whole lot of stuff, but there's something, I don't know if the word's comforting, but there's something that, well, I think you talked about, just having men around, like you're raising boys or something, just to have men plugging in there has such an impact.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, we don't have to get serious all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, guys like to do stuff together. Men like to accomplish. We like to build. So, you know, sometimes it's just my buddies and I, we're just gonna go out, you know? And and sometimes we go out to the, you know, on a trip or something like that together. Great, let's go do that. Or we take our, you know, when we were younger and our kids were younger, you know, we'd take our kids and go play ball or do something else. Great, let's do that. Let's have fun together. Mm-hmm. Let's smoke a brisket. Let's do, which in Texas, you know, we smoke a lot of things. Like, just smoke meat, okay? and drink bourbon and sit around a fire or jump in a pool. Uh-huh. Great, let's do something together. And while we're doing that, if, you know, something deep comes up, let's do it. But regardless, if you're with me and you're one of my brothers, at the end of that time, you know what I'm going to ask you before you go home. And that is, what do you need prayers for? And you know what's going to happen after that. I'm going to say, okay, let's stop and pray. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because regardless of anything of how, you know, let's bring it back to Jesus Christ and our faith. Because he's the one it's all about. It's so he's kind of we're in orbit around Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And we never leave that orbit.
Right.
So.
What about, let me ask you this. You're married, have a number of kids, and Pope Benedict, I spoke about this, I'm sure John Paul did, but just how marriage itself evangelizes. And maybe one of the most prominent way to evangelize is the witness of the family. People look at that and they want that in their nature. They want communion, right? They want a fruitful life.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I can't say who in this, you know, in this podcast, because it could be public, but I had somebody close to me who's not a Christian, who one time said, I want my kids to be like your kids. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean? The response was, well, your kids are good kids and they're smart kids and you trust them and They're not perfect, but, you know, I know that they're going to grow up and be successful and good Christians and, you know, those kind of things. And I said, well, there's a reason why that is the case, is because my wife, Christy, and I raised our kids to believe in Jesus first. We did everything we could to hopefully get them to that point that they believe in Jesus Christ, even in the midst of suffering and problems and in scandal or whatever else, right? And we've got that. And that's the basis of everything else. The virtue, the happy relationships, the rest of the stuff flows out of their faith life. Because the principle here is God has no grandchildren. God only has children. So the kid, my kids can't, you know, just inherit my faith or my wife's faith or our faith. They have to have their own faith. So hope, you know, they have their own faith, and then they make their life decisions and they've grown in those things. And the other person was intrigued, in a sense, by a completely different lifestyle that we live based on a Christian worldview and understanding of life, because it was outside the norm for that person.
Yeah, there's something so beautiful just about a family. Sometimes I help out a parish. They got a lot of young families, and they'll have like a potluck or something. Mm-hmm. It's just intoxicating to see all these beautiful young kids and just the beauty, the joy, the excitement. You know, it's like there's something about it that I think just speaks to our human nature.
Yeah, what's the phrase? If you're perishing and crying, then it's dying.
Right.
You know, and so I'm no longer what we would call a young family. My wife and I have been married 30 years, but we certainly do have... we have a beautiful family that is imperfect. Mm-hmm. And in the eyes of Jesus Christ, he loves us right in the midst of it, right? And an imperfect, beautiful family, I think, is a great thing to aim for all of us.
Well, let's jump back to the priesthood a second. You mentioned on the show, too, when you're working with priests and parish renewal, it was essential, right, that the priest was on board.
Yes.
100%. Talk about that.
Yeah, because, well, think about it this way. I've worked with some groups that had the pastor who really wasn't, I guess you could say, into it, you know, didn't want to be a part of it. And they can honestly, in many ways, stamp out any kind of fruitful endeavor faster than anybody else because they have the authority. Mm-hmm. And so I only work with priests now who want to work with me. Mm. And what does that look like? Well, what we do now is I don't take anything for granted, and I don't make any assumptions as to who's a part of our group. So if you say, you know, I'm a DRE, I'm a youth minister, I'm pastor and priest, I need to know you before I know what you believe, how you operate, what your dreams and hopes are, et cetera, et cetera. And I need honesty and humility. And if I've got those things and I, you know, you're willing to work, then I think that God can change and do big things in your life. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, then what we do is we start with what I've already talked about here, which is some pastoral practices, evangelization and discipleship on a personal level. Do I do these things? Do I share my faith? Do I talk about it with strangers and those close to me? Do I understand where people are coming from? Am I trying to sharpen my skills in a sense, you know?
Yeah.
It's like taking the tools out of the shed and busting the rust off them and then sharpening them up. That's what we're trying to do here. And for a new age. So maybe we teach you how to use some new tools. And then we're going to teach you how to hand those tools on to others so that one day you're going to be the one who's going to have apprentices who are going to be learning under you how to use these tools in evangelization discipleship. Okay, once we have individuals who are doing it and a team that has gone through this process together, now we say, okay, let's apply what you've learned from an individual pastoral skill standpoint to an institution and to the parish, to the diocese. What could it look like if we were to start to scale this, if we were to start to make this institutional, if we were to start to make this cultural, okay, here are some principles that apply, here's how we can do it, here's some processes that we can go through to get to that point. But I think what happens in the past is we've just jumped into like a strategic planning or pastoral planning process without mm-hmm. doing that background work of mm-hmm. prayer and pastoral skill building and teamwork mm-hmm. and other stuff. And what happens is that once things get difficult, we fall back into what we know and learn. Mm-hmm. And most of those habits haven't really helped us, honestly, mm-hmm. at least not in the institutional level, because look at how parishes operate. Most of them aren't operating in a outward missional framework towards, yeah. you know, let's go out there and win souls for Jesus Christ and make this sucker the biggest, baddest, and best mm-hmm. parish that we possibly could for the kingdom.
And get a coffee shop.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's, see, that's the thing is, I think we, again, it's like, what are the, we look at what we know. So yeah. we look at this, you know, the Baptist church down the street or the non-denominational, and they've got a coffee shop mm-hmm. and they let people, is a coffee shop what you're supposed to do? I don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think a coffee shop could work, but let me give you a couple of things that are not going to work with a coffee shop. Number one, it cannot be in your church building if you're going to have a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. It needs to be next to the liquor store and the vape shop in a strip mall down mm-hmm. the street. Mm-hmm. And then it can't be named, you know, St. Joe's Roastery. Because people don't go to something that's called St. Joe's Roastery. Mm-hmm. They go to Harvest, or they go to the best dang coffee in, you know, yeah. Birmingham or whatever yeah, it is, yeah. right? So name it and hide it, and then do underhanded evangelization where you're building relationship with regulars and yet you're still training people on how to do this stuff in the coffee shop yeah. who you're hiring to go do it. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're called to? I don't know. But if you're going to do it in a strategic kind of tactical way, right? And that's a process of like, do we even know how to discern? Do we know how to think outside the box? And if not, do we have a process whereby we can go through this stuff? And that's kind of how we work, is I want people to really be deeply move themselves and then think God wants something great from our parish. Mm-hmm. What that is might look completely different. Because if you got a bunch of poor people around you, you better serve the poor people. But if you live out in the rich burbs, how are we serving the rich burbs, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to look different for every parish. And so mm-hmm. this one overarching, let's just do the big strategic or pastoral planning process, and we're going to poll people, and we're going to know what they're mm-hmm. going to do, want what they want, and then we'll roll out 27 different things. And we'll, you know, you look back in 5 years, well, that pastoral process is literally a binder in the pastor's office that didn't change anything. Mm-hmm. As you can tell, I'm not real big on how we've done this. So let's do something different.
You mentioned too that something that can be a block for a team trying to address parish needs is unresolved conflict.
Yeah.
What is your advice there about working through that? How do you resolve that?
Yeah, you're going to have healthy disagreement and yeah. conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know how to do that, you got to learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. And this is where these kind of things, like speeding up a process to be able to learn how to do something you don't know how to do right now, how to have a healthy conversation with people that you distrust currently, how to have mm-hmm. conflict within your staff when it's always been unhealthy. Those kind of things are hard to learn if you're just doing it internally. Mm-hmm. And I highly recommend you bring somebody from the outside in. This is why I get to do what I do, and I can speed up the process and we can go mock speed because I don't have the history with your parish. I don't have an agenda that, you know, this is what I want to see mm-hmm. from St. Gertrude's or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the personality conflicts that you probably have in the history that's caused all this stuff anyway. Mm-hmm. So there are outsiders like myself who get to speed up and help and can do that. And I highly recommend if you're just stuck because of those kind of things, yeah. you know, the dysfunction within a team, mm-hmm. you probably need some help.
Yeah. Let's jump to someone might be listening to this and they're not forming the team. They don't have a team, mm-hmm. but they're wondering what they can do as an individual. And I know just after the show, mentioned some great points too about how to have this conversation because it can be awkward. You don't want to offend people. And today there's a rage culture and there's so much division that it seems like it can easily go south quickly. What advice do you give? I remember one time I was in an airport and I was standing in line and he was an older gentleman and I just started talking to him, trying to just chat and he was Catholic, but he left the church mm-hmm. and there was a scandal that directly affected him and he just he got angry and just, it really wasn't directed at me. It was about the church, and he settled down, but we never really had a good conversation. But I think a person can have a fear of something, you know, big emotions coming out or whatever. But what are some practical tips about how to get to the, okay, we can be friends and talk about things, have a nice conversation, but to get to the deeper stuff?
Yeah, a couple of things. One is questions matter more than answers in those things. And now I'm an answer guy. You're asking me all the questions today. And as you can tell, I like to have people ask me questions. So I've had to learn this skill myself, honestly. But asking the right questions. So I'll just ask people things like, well, you know, how did you grow up? What were you raised? Where were you raised? Or if I know them a little bit better, let's just say I know somebody doesn't believe, you know, or they might even self-identify as an atheist. I'd say, well, tell me about the God you don't believe in. And then I just listen. I ask a broad, open-ended question, and I let them talk. And then I'm curious. If you're curious in other people, it draws them out of themselves, and they want to talk. So just be curious in other people about what they're passionate about. That's another question I love. What are you passionate about? What makes you tick? Or if somebody tells me, you could tell they start getting excited talking about their kids or their dog or their tattoos or their job or whatever it might be, I just ask them questions about that. If I can see the excitement and passion rising, oh, that's a neat job. I've never even heard of somebody who does systems engineers or, you know, whatever. I'm just the most curious guy who wants to know everything about your job now. Then I start to turn it back into, you know, now if I ask you, you know, what do you do for a living? At some point, you're probably going to be polite enough to say, well, what do you do for a living? Now I've got a natural in. Because I say, well, I'm working, you know, with Catholic leaders. And I've been working in Catholic ministry, and I run in a Catholic group that works with this stuff. Now they're going to have one of several reactions. One could be, okay, I'm going to shut this conversation down right now. And that's fine. Then I know maybe that's not where we're going to go. Okay. Other people might be, well, I was raised Catholic. Really? Yeah. Can I ask, I'm curious always as to why people leave the church, because there's a lot of reasons. Can you tell me why you left? Then I'm listening, because you know what? I may have struggled with that same thing. Oh, I left because of priest scandals. Oh, priest scandals drive me up a wall. Like I get just as upset as they do or more sometimes, right? Or, you know, so I'm trying to make some kind of way of identifying with them, being curious in them, opening up a path so that they can ask questions, so that we can go down this road together. Okay. So, you know, it's looking for common things. I think also asking at some point, well, you know, I've always tried to understand where people are coming from in this. And I don't need to, you know, just preach at you or anything, but tell me about X, you know, and then I ask a question about that. So I'm trying to take it deeper with those kind of questions. And I preface it with, it's okay that we talk about this.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I'm not being defensive. My body language is relaxed. If somebody asks me a tough question, I don't get upset. I don't let my emotions get the best of me anymore. The truth is way better than me getting upset, right?
Yeah.
Loving them is way better than me getting upset. Allowing them a place to be able to air their grievances, in a sense, it's like George Costanza from Seinfeld, let them go ahead and do this stuff, okay? So I just want a place where people can talk about things that matter. And so I try to set the tone in that. And I don't think it's perfect, but it does work. And then finally, I'll say this, Father, you know, asking people what they need prayers for is just I tell you what, it's like opening up the window to a new vista for some people. So, and then if you've got the guts, then just take the next step, which is, can we pray for that right now? And I prayed in airports, on airplanes, and Ubers, hotels, bars, on sides of streets, everywhere else. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I was in Washington, D.C. This is like right, the EWT has got a news office, like on Capitol Hill, I guess you'd say, or in that area. And I stopped, there was a homeless person in a wheelchair, and wound up giving her some money. And then I came back and said, can I pray? And I don't remember what she said now, but I prayed over her, gave her a blessing. She had some health issues. And then she said, let me pray over you. And it was like, I was like, this woman has faith. I mean, she was like articulate.
Yeah.
And I was like blown away. I said, this is DC, right? And then I prayed with another guy. And then this is the one that kind of got me. One time I was in the same trip. I'm standing on a corner and this guy is like pulling. He came to a stop sign and he's pulling out around me. And as the car is moving, he goes, hey, pray for me, Father. I got a job interview today. I need your prayers. So he's driving. It's like,
That's awesome.
I don't get that response in the Bible Belt here in Birmingham. It was like, I was really like shocked in D.C. So
God bless you. Throwing up the sign of the cross as they're driving away. Ran the red light. God bless you again. Forgive your sin.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy because what, you know, there's no perfect way to evangelize. There's no perfect way to share our faith. And yet God uses weak people like you and me, mm-hmm. just like he used weak people who came into our lives,
yeah.
our families, our friends, and others, who helped transform us, right?
Right.
That's just what he's got to work with. Yeah. That's the incarnational reality of humanity. We are made in his image and likeness, and he can use this flawed human being, all the flawed human beings, to give grace.
Right.
That's the amazing thing. And he wants to give us his divine life. He wants to give us forgiveness. He wants to be in relationship with us and the rest of the world. We just got to get out of our own way in a lot of ways, you know, and just have some guts and courage and go out there and try. And you know what? Sometimes fail.
Right.
And be okay to try again, because failure's failure.
Yeah. That's what we keep hearing from guests we've been interviewing, is like just the emphasis on the one-on-one.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's almost, because I was thinking with my own story, I mean, I had this conversion experience,
mm-hmm.
and there was like a few figures that was just one-on-one that really helped me. And do you all do a lot like with small groups? Is that part of it?
We do not, we're really not the creators of programs. Mm-hmm. But we certainly will help implement them in parishes if that's a part of what they have strategized is going to be part of, you know, how they're going to do things. So, that's a whole other podcast, is how to use small groups well.
Yeah,
it's a whole other. It really is a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Well, we better wrap it up. I know you're going to meet with Father Mitch tonight. So
poor Father Mitch.
Thanks so much for
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.